dial your password and press pound. You have 1 new message and 4 saved messages. To review, press 1. First new message sent today at 12 a.m.
In the years before the personal computer, there was the telephone. In the days before the World Wide Web, in the wee small hours before the dawn of email, there was voicemail. From the late 80s to the mid 90s, in the suburban sprawl of Silicon Valley, there existed a community of voicemail box owners, or voice jailers.
Voice jailers, a ragtag cadre of 4 philosophical insomniacs bound together by the humming copper filament of their own collective isolation. This is their story. These are their voices. This is Midnight Voice Jail.
When you go to sleep, the imagination is allowed to play, unfettered by the conscious mind. And yet the body is immobilized so that it doesn't get into any trouble.
Dream.
Yeah, if you don't mind, I think I will go on a brief tangent concerning dreams. Certain dreams in particular that I have had. I don't like water either, meaning big bodies of water. I don't like, for instance, at the beach, I won't go in the water. I mean, at least not very far. I don't go swimming in the ocean because I think about things out there in the water, and it's such an alien element, and like you're just more or less helpless, you know, in the water. I mean, I'll go in a swimming pool, but not like an ocean or a lake, things like that I stay out of. In this dream, it was like I was in this body of water, just like, it was like, you know, it must have been an ocean. There was myself and like just a lot of other people. We were in the water, you know, just floating there, kind of helpless, dog paddling, just staying afloat. And then this man came to me. He was like floating on a piece of wood, you know, basically what it was. And he was this tall, lanky, kind of sinister black man. And he came up to me, and I got onto the piece of wood that he had. It was long, you know. And it was like I knew, we didn't exchange any words, yet I knew that he would swim. He would do the swimming for me. He would power me while I held on to his piece of wood to a body of land or somewhere safe and solid, you know, out of the water. And I was willing to do this, even though I knew that it was going to cost me something horrible, something that I don't know exactly what, you know, but I knew the price that I had to pay for this was going to be something really horribly sinister and just kind of evil and bad, you know, and yet I did it anyway. And so I attached myself to his piece of wood, and he started going. And, you know, he hadn't been going very long. We hadn't been moving along very long at all. When all of a sudden I looked behind me and down into the water behind me, and not very far below the surface of the water, and I could see it very clearly, you know, like apparently the water was very clean in my dream. But just behind me, like a matter of feet, down not very far below the surface of that water, was this huge, I mean, we're talking just, you know, primitive, primal, huge shark. And it was coming right towards us. And I can tell you, I have never felt such a sharp, incredible, just a sharply, incredibly potent feeling of fear, just fucking solid right in the pit of my stomach. I was so afraid of that fucking shark because I knew it was just going to come and fucking swallow me alive. It was going to eat me. And I was so fucking afraid. And there it came. But then at the last instant, it did not get me. It went after the man, the black man who was my guide or whatever he was. And it went after him, and he went swimming away somewhere. And then it was like I was left there with a piece of wood.
You may start your message now.
Oh God, here it comes.
I love voicemail.
I love voicemail.
Voice jail.
492 system does rule.
The mailbox community, the mailbox world.
Your outgoings have gotten interesting, and I think it's time you be inducted into the voicemail hall of fame.
Voice jail.
It's easy to do. Go ahead and try it.
You have reached 492-80.
Well, that's pretty funny you got there. Voice jail.
I noticed we're the only ones up at this time of the day.
Can't help but sound bizarre.
9:25 p.m.
eternal hate am I here, awaiting of my release, waiting of planning an Armageddon, and that will never cease. Oh, you pitiful fools, with your VCRs and trinkets made of dust. Soon your televisions will all disappear in a flaming world so crushed and destroyed by me that nothing survives, and the world turns into cold hard glass and strays far from the sun. Each one of you bleeding out your life until that day is done. Soon, my friends, how soon it will be when I will find the power to return to the horrible inverted throne. Satan names the hour.
I got a message from 115 that, I got a message from Mr. 115.
It is September 12th, 1988, and just going through some bullshit, you know. Been leading such an apathetic, vulgar lifestyle here the last couple of months, and I think that's a big source of all the nightmares that I'm having. The writing nightmares, because I'm not writing as often as I should, you know, as often as I'm inspired to. I'm not writing as much. And the aggression, I think, is the aggressive dreams and the confusion nightmares that I'm having now, where there's just no subject matter whatsoever, but just feelings of complete confusion and hysteria and anxiety, I think, are a result of the way that I've been living my life. So, I don't know. This 115 set of values, morals, and everything is just completely fucked up inside. I mean, I haven't cleaned my house in over a month. That's a reflection of how irresponsible I've become. It'll be okay. Okay, I mean, all the writing, I've been writing about suicide and all that silly shit, and not that I've been contemplating suicide, it was just being in that feeling, that mode, you know?
All I can say is just be yourself. You have your own pace, and give a shit. Try to take a step back and look a little objectively. What is making you so unhappy? Why are you hurting so much? If you can't figure it out, ask yourself. I mean, why? Why are you feeling so, having these nightmares? You have the answer inside of you, and I know you're probably getting pissed. I can just feel it, you know, you're probably all shut up. I've gone through periods where I've had nightmares after nightmares. I've gone through days where I've been pretty close to suicide. I mean, it's just part of it. I mean, look, you're thrown out there, you're on your own and stuff. Look, I'm living with my mom, I feel that way. It's part of you. You've got yourself to look after yourself, and it gets pretty damn fucking lonely. You feel isolated, and you feel like, you know, there must be something wrong with you, how these nightmares and stuff. But, Steve, that's all I can tell you. I don't want to give you any more of my, quote, amateur-ish psychology, because every time I give it to anyone, they never want to listen, and they don't really care to hear my opinion. But I care. I want you to feel better, and I thought I'd put my input.
1:15 a.m.
Well, thanks for reading that to me. The line that stuck out with me was that she said, that her waking life affected her dreams, and her dreams affected her waking life, and I certainly know that. I mean, you know, how many times has it been where, you know, you wake up from a dream, and it affects you the rest of the day? You know, you don't even have to so much as remember the dream throughout the day, it leaves you with a feeling.
Welcome, Prince of Dreams, exploring the question of man's place in the universe, between the brute animal force of nature and the higher spiritual realm. What they saw rather than what they dreamed about. He became the artist of the inner life of his times.
Mr. 115.
The Prince. Prince of Dreams. Reveal the young artist's secret desire to let his imagination take flight.
The imagination has to be free from what it sees in order to properly create.
Look up into a more spiritual realm, belief in man's spiritual ascent through intellectual development, the illumination power of the mind. The logic of the visible should serve the invisible, as dreamlike or surreal as this image.
He was afraid that when he began using, that he would sort of lapse into the description of reality. And I think the way around it for him was to use a hallucinatory state.
The spiritual quest. Notice this figure's closed eyes, as well as the mysterious glow that emanates from within him. Around her, however, flowers explode in brilliant hues of blue and green, as if they are her dreams, her innermost thoughts, visible in the shimmering air around her quiet gaze. They seem to float, weightless, as if in a brilliantly colored dream.
Steve.
Yes, sir.
Did you watch Northern Exposure the past couple nights?
Yes.
Did you see that Halloween episode? Hey, Flashman. He's like, hey, Tooks, or something like, he's got a total different act, totally different. He's like, hey, babe, what's your name? Oh, yeah, right, nice suit, Flashman. Oh, nice shirt.
Then who, Maggie saying that?
The Halloween bar, and there's Joel behind the bar helping out. He's like, how did you do that? How did you what? He's like, how did you get all that mousse out of your hair? I don't know what you're talking about. And then Shelly goes, oh, he's been here practically all day with us. Oh, okay, if you guys want to play along, fine. That was good.
That's Maggie saying that, right?
Maggie saying that. And then, I just want to know how you did it so fast. And then he starts describing him. Did this guy have this kind of pants, this kind of belt, and this kind of golden thing? He's like, yeah. Oh, God, and he runs out. And then they just had this entire rad technology of special effects, him talking to himself, walking by himself.
That's his twin. He really has a twin.
Oh, it was so neat.
That's his twin. I got a real-life twin.
And he turns out, you know, he hit his head, and he wakes up.
Don't ignore me.
Hello. Steve.
Yes.
And he wakes up. There's Maggie sitting on the bed. He's in bed.
Pay attention to me.
And there's people. There's two guys in the background. I forget who they were. Hauling walks up to the window, puts his arms on the window. Boom. Exactly the same thing as Wizard of Oz at the end. When she's laying in bed and you were in this dream, and you were in this, and all this stuff happened, and Joel's going, yeah, you guys were in this dream and hauling, you were in it. I'm like, God, this is Wizard of Oz. They had it totally set up exactly like that.
Oh, my God.
And then if you didn't get it, you hear this guy in the background, yeah, we're going to Patunka or Tecumseh or whatever, Texas or Kansas. Something
whose dream was it, Maggie's?
No, Joel's.
When they do a parody and then, like, for all the stupid people, they telegraph it at the end in case you didn't get it.
Yeah, and then they played the Somewhere Over the Rainbow.
Oh, right, and then Joel went,
I got it when Hauling put his arms on the windowsill and started, hey, is Joel okay? I know he had a big hit on the head. I'm like, oh, my God, this is the Wizard of Oz.
But see, it's not funny when they keep rubbing it in. Look, the Wizard of Oz. Look, it's the Wizard of Oz. We're really serious. Look, we're going to play the music. Look.
No, they did it really good. It was really good.
No, it wasn't.
I don't care. You didn't see. You don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, you were also talking about dreams and wondering if the people in your dreams live on, you know, after you wake up. And, yeah, I've thought thoughts like that before as well. You know, it's pretty hard pill to swallow that all the characters in your dreams are figments of your imagination, you know, and it also makes you wonder why you would imagine such things. Because quite often in our dreams, we're in situations that we wouldn't want to be in our waking life, you know, and you wonder why did I dream about that? Why did I dream about that situation? Why did I dream about that toilet overflowing? Why did I dream about killing someone? Why did I dream about being chased? You know, blah, 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 blah. So, but I tend to agree with Freud in respect to, I think dreams are for the most part just wish fulfillment, just deep-seated wish fulfillment, a place where you can just be and act crazy and not have to suffer any kind of, you know, consequences. You know, in your dreams you can kill and just do all kinds of bad things and there's no, you know, consequences to them, generally speaking. Although, you know, how many times have you had dreams where it's affected the mood of your day, you know? I mean, that certainly has happened to me many a time.
Time will do you wrong. Deep release. an incredible dream, too. Yeah, interestingly enough, I had a dream today that involved time. Illusion of time. I don't really have any concept of time.
Dreams are weird.
Anyway, my brother's a psychologist, and he enjoys interpreting dreams and so forth. I guess there's, depending on what school of psychology you follow, there's different kinds of interpretations for different dreams.
It's weird when you talk about something, or, you know, you don't actually think about it. You're talking, and you know what you're saying, or you know what you're thinking, but you just let it go. But when you go to sleep, sometimes your brain or your mind acts on that one thing that you didn't think about, and it brings it right up.
I found that it's easiest to remember dreams by having a tape machine close at hand, so that when you wake up, you may immediately relay the details of the dream on the tape, or else writing it down.
As far as I can remember, in most of my dreams, the way I'm perceiving it is, well, like you mentioned, like watching yourself on a videotape. You know, it's like I'm watching myself. You know, from a distance, I'm removed, watching the dream, whether I'm in it or not.
Because otherwise, with me anyway, I forget just about within a half a minute. I'll forget what it was. Now, if you do forget what a dream is, sometimes later on in the day, an occurrence will happen. And, ooh, that'll jog your memory. And you'll say, oh, yeah, wow, what a weird dream that was, man. And, you know, it'll bring it all back. But sometimes, you can't count on that. So the only thing to do, like I say, is to write it down immediately or put it on tape.
I usually wake up and I'll think, whoa, I dreamt that. I hardly even thought about that thing. It's like the less thing I think about, the more I'm going to dream about it. It's really strange.
Today I was taking a nap, and I guess I was lying on my back, and I was having trouble breathing. And I was having a dream that, I was in my room, and I was having trouble breathing, and my nose had kind of elongated out or something, and I was having trouble getting air to myself. And I ran in the kitchen, and my dad and his girlfriend were there, and I said, I'm going to call 911. And he said, no, you're not. And I took the phone, and I slammed it against the little desk there in the kitchen, very angrily. And he said, okay, call 911. And at that moment, I felt like I had gotten past the blockage in my breathing, that doing that little outburst of anger had blocked, unblocked the problem with my breathing. And it was okay for a little bit. And then my doctor, Dr. Zimmer, showed up, and he had a full beard. And he was going to, I don't know what he's going to do, examine me or whatever. And he was, I'm like going up to him and talking to him, and he's saying, where's Jim? And I said, I'm Jim. Don't you know me? I'm Jim. And he's like, couldn't believe that it was me. And then I kind of got the breathing thing taken care of somehow, and then Robin Williams was there, and he was, was very happy and huggy and everything that I had unblocked my breathing problem. And I went to hug him, and immediately started feeling like I was going to faint, and I was collapsing, and I was kind of dragging him down on top of me as I fell to the floor, and he was kind of really uncomfortable with that. And I thought, geez, how nice to have Robin Williams in your house, this big famous guy, and he's my friend and everything.
Most of my dreams happen in places like, malls. Malls, office environments, hospitals, airports, whatever. Just some kind of place you don't belong, wandering around. Often find myself in administrative areas, employee-only type of areas that I shouldn't be in, especially when I'm just like a customer or whatever. It's all quite bizarre.
And I'm leaning up against a white car, and I'm talking to who I think is Ronald. And then after a minute goes by, I realize that it's not Ronald, that it's just some guy, that I stop the guy's car, and I'm just kind of talking to him, and he must think I'm nuts. He must think I'm crazy, this complete stranger coming up, leaning against his car, and he's in the driver's seat, and just talking to him like he's someone else.
More often than not, when I have one of those nap dreams, I'm usually very sleepy in them, and wandering around, and usually, because I usually have nap dreams after work hell, I usually dream that I'm at some kind of work hell. It's not always the work hell that I'm, presently employed at, but it's just some kind of work hell. And also, quite often, like I said, I'll nod out in the dream. Like, maybe I'll be eating something, and then I'll get very, very sleepy, and then I wake up and, oh, did I fall asleep during the meal? Oh, where's my food? Oh, where is everybody? Why is the restaurant empty?
And like, I'm going through all these elevators trying to find my building, and they're not going to the right floors, you know. They're going to different floors. And
or the number pad will have weird dream numbers, you know, symbols that are supposed to be numbers, but, you know, in reality they're not numbers. They're just weird little alien symbols, you know, some kind of hieroglyphics or whatever. Maybe as you go to sleep, you sink into levels of unconsciousness. And if you're just taking a nap, somehow you're not going to sink to the deepest level that you would if you were laying down, going to bed for like 6 to 8 hours. You know, I don't know what that is. I don't know what that means.
I found myself in Berkeley in the 60s during this demonstration riot, and the cops were shooting guns at people, and I was running through the streets and trying to hide behind a car, and two fucking horses got away from the cops. They just freaked, and they were running at me, and I thought I was going to get trampled, and I hid underneath a car, and I thought, oh shit, what if one of the bullets hits the fucking gas tank of the car? I'm going to be fried under here, but I can't get out because there's fucking horses running around and everything, and I get trampled, and I woke up choking and gagging and drooling, and so I don't know which one of us is going to go first, but don't be too surprised if I have a heart attack in my sleep or something, or just suddenly drop dead, because I think it's going to happen soon. Some part of me really hopes it will.
End of message.
I've been having a sweet dream.
I wonder if it is possible to feel different about things because of a dream. For example, sometimes I feel differently or learn new things from my dreams. Seriously, how could you learn new things from a dream if they are in your head in the first place? Last night, I dreamt I had a baby. Not that I was having one, that I had one already. It was mine, I know, my very baby. And in my dream, I was the same age I am now. It was weird. I was feeling funny in my dream. As an adult, somebody had to change the baby's diaper and sprinkle white baby powder on it. And then I was holding the baby, and I was thinking, this is mine. It came from inside of me. I made it. It is a part of me, and it belongs to me, and I love it. I love it. I never felt those things before. Actually, I never even wanted to have a baby. What kind of a song is that to play over the box?
I am 18 years old. I am not nuts. I have left my fucking body in a dream. My friend was fully conscious, and she was sitting wide awake, and she saw me standing in her room, and I got right up close to her, and then I disappeared, and I woke up, and I did it, and I've been trying 2.5 fucking years, and I finally did it, so try it. Fuck around. Just play around. Concentrate on somebody. You can make somebody stop at your house when they're driving up the freeway. Get into their head. You can know when people are lying to you. Do whatever. Transcend time. Wormholes. Whatever. I'm on the edge. I haven't figured it out yet. I will try my damnedest, and I'll leave lots of funky messages on all of you guys' numbers. Burn weed. Do whatever it takes. Just believe in yourself. That is the key. If you believe you can do it, you can fucking do it. That's all it takes. You have to be totally sure of yourself. Predicting earthquakes, whatever. I mean, knowing who is going to be calling you on the phone the second you pick up, knowing what they're wearing, knowing where they are, whatever the hell. It's been done. I've done it. Walked into rooms. Feel up my spine, bam, a light goes out. Or point to my TV, bam, it flicks on. I don't know how it's done. I'll figure it out. Don't worry about it. Just try it. It can be done. I know this. I've fucking done it. All I have to do is figure out how.
Amazing. Call them if they will listen. If they will try, it would be even better. The song haunts in the background of this day. So sure the melody swims, dives in and out of my mind. He can almost hear it in his dreams, in his sleep. This one's for you. And he continues, only 2 more hours, hourly, monthly, I dream. I have waited a long time, and this day impatience fills me. Tension impedes me. I don't know why, do not question. People, they're everywhere. You cannot avoid them. You cannot ignore them. Just shut it out. He laughs in the background to the music. She glances once.
Three nights later, I had this very specific dream. In it, I'm a thick round stone holding a sharp knife. It's obvious to me that I'm tops as chief priest in Homeric Greece. In fact, I'm officiating in some immensely important hieroglyphics on which depends the fate of the crops or herd of children to look professional. The sacrifice is stretching in a long queue across the plain of Argos. I know it's Argos because of the red stone filled with blood. Unknown to the others. On either side of me stand two inner tubes, wearing masks as well, lovely Popeye masks, following a pattern. I'm wearing a wide gold mask, all noble beard. They're enormously strong, these boys and girls, as each absolutely tired child steps forward, they grab it from behind and throw it over a military expedition. Then, with a surgical skill that amazes even me, I fit in the stone and slice elegantly down to the seamstress. The only thing is, I part my soils, yank them out and throw them hot and steaming on the floor. The other two then study the chief priest in Homeric Greece. It's this unique ritual sacrifice got me where I am. I'm beginning to feel distinctly nauseous. My face is going green. Of course, I redouble my knife, cutting and snipping for all I'm worth, mainly because I know that if those two others so much as suspect my talent for carving and the implied doubt that this repetitive and smelly work is doing any social good at all, then I'll be next over the stone. And with each victim, it's getting worse. And then, of course, the damn mask begins to slip. The priests both turn and look at it. Their gold pop eyes suddenly pop. They tear the knife from my hand and I wake up.
I have urban dream already, they're not good. Panic, big, long, bad nightmares. And they're really frustrating. They kind of make you want to hit something when you wake up.
For the last 10 years, I had every 3 or 4 months, I had envisioned myself perishing in a flaming car wreck, and this is serious, I'm not kidding you.
I swear to God, I was wide awake. I could see, you know, my room, you know, just a little bit, you know, there's a little bit of illumination in there. My eyes were adjusted to where I could see my room, and I could see this thing walking in my bedroom, sitting on my bed.
Every few months, I had that dream. But I know somebody that I don't like, the driver was not identified.
Anyway, I looked at my, I could see my bedspread, it was a car. It looked like a car.
It was a small car though, and I was sitting in the passenger seat and the driver was trying to pass someone on a hill. It may have either been Highway 9 or Highway 17, and the driver was passing someone, and anyway, it resulted in a flaming car accident in which I perished.
Walk out of the house down my car to my folks, and got a bottle of wine in my hand.
I'm looking at the door, and a shadow walks in. It's just a big black figure. I couldn't see a body. It was just a big black figure with a bushy hair.
I look at the cop, and he's right, so I'm not standing on the floor.
I knew at the time that I was 33, so during that 33rd year, and I was really sweating it, and I'm not kidding. I was real hesitant to sit in the right-hand passenger seat in the front. I didn't want to duplicate the conditions of the dream.
I know it was looking at me. I couldn't see the face, but it was staring at me, just looking at me.
I looked at the ticket. Turns out the kid got my the front end of my car. Ticket was for $8,082.
And I'm like, whoa.
I'm not kidding you. That's my 33rd year. When I turned 34, and I kind of breathed a sigh of relief.
And I thought it was my mom. And it's like, anyway, I'm going, I said, Mom, and they didn't say anything.
That was strange. I don't know what the hell would cause dreams like that. I don't have the slightest idea.
Go, Mom.
I don't know what that meant. I really don't. I also had some very, really disturbing dreams, too, about once or twice a year, I'll have a dream where all my teeth will fall out.
So, Mom! Got up and it kind of didn't run, but it walked very fast out of my room.
Really strange.
I was either dreaming or it was some sort of entity, some sort of spirit, some sort of something, but that scared the fucking shit out of me, man.
I envision someday that science will come up with a way by which we can record our dreams three-dimensionally. Somehow, we can hook up some electrodes somehow to us and to our brains, place electrodes on our scalp, and then be able to make recordings, holograms of our dreams. It's not totally outside the realm of possibility, and maybe there'll be a way to do it one day.
Oh, that feels great. That feels wonderful.
There's a small plane flying around my head. Yes, that's very nice. We'll let you know.
I hate you.
I'm sorry, you have a small plane flying around your head counterclockwise.
You hurt my feelings. I hate you.
Do you understand what you're saying?
We're out here on the city street, folks. Oh, excuse me.
That gentleman looks
if
like
I could
you.
Just, sir, can I just talk to you for just a minute? Sir? Oh, I guess he was in a hurry.
Excuse me,
I'm sorry.
I've seen them before, and I'm enjoying your process.
And with the news, oh my God.
Issues of overtime, sometimes it's working to get family day, and their nerves.
New.
Large butt.
The world of science.
Well, that was all good fun, and we all had a jolly good laugh. Now, for the software, it's an utterly familiar feeling to look back on the way one was behaving a year, a month, or an hour ago, and to be amazed. One's personality is always changing, and one is always learning new things and forgetting old ones. There's also the extreme example of brainwashing. We are inclined to say that a person's essential identity is unchanged, even if he has been given a completely false set of memories. The curious thing is that you must express your individual consciousness in the same words that I use. I am. I am me.
I exist. The philosopher Hegel was very struck by this fact and deemed it an instance of the divine nature of language. What a conclusion might one draw from the fact that your essential consciousness and my essential consciousness are expressed in the same words? We can go far from this. The essence of consciousness is really nothing more than simple existence. I am. Why should the possession of this sort of consciousness be denied to anything that does exist? Aquinas has said that God is pure existence, unmodified. Is it not evidence that there is a certain single something, call it God or the year one or...
All right, well, let's take this point. Let's back up.
As Aquinas has said, Governor, that the God is a pure existence, unmodified.
No. Pure existence, I don't know what that means.
Is pure existence.
That doesn't mean anything. That's pepperoni.
All you can be.
That's saying pepperoni is not sausage. And
well, to exist is to have consciousness. The other things one might feel are necessary for consciousness.
No pattern can be conscious until it exists, until it is brought into reality.
No, what does that mean?
Existence finally is the only reality required for consciousness. A rock is conscious, this piece of paper is conscious, and of course is a robot before both after, and after his behavior evolved to us.
What does that mean? Robot's gonna be able to think the way we think. He ain't never gonna be able to think. Mankind will never be able to produce anything equivalent to mankind itself. The cellular structure alone, man, there's no way we could ever recreate any of that, Jack. Now we can imitate, right? Yes. with little machines and so forth. I am truly amazed.
Buttocks. No. Stop.
The hell is that all about? Okay. Well, you managed to have me escape reality for about 4 minutes.
21st, 10:12 p.m. from mailbox 8038.
Oh, what would people say?
I've been having really vivid dreams lately. Maybe because my life has been so vivid, it's strange if I think about the dream. Right after I get up, I can remember it for a few days, especially if I tell someone about it. Last night, I was having all kinds of arguments with my parents. I ran outside, and there were my good friends piled into two cars. I literally jumped into a car, and we sped away. It didn't matter anymore. I wasn't going back. My parents drove after us, chasing us. When we were a ways ahead, we all got into one car. We turned and waved through all kinds of streets. When we had lost them for the moment, we got out and looked for a place to hide. There were trees and high grass. We sneaked through the trees, and there was a hidden little village. Surrounded in trees and a bamboo wall, it was separate and protected from the outside. There were people living there. We only saw a couple, and we began to talk. I remember saying in a loud voice, "I'm from the real world." They were very, very friendly. The rest were out gathering food, and they all returned all at once. They all rushed in and began sitting down at large tables with benches and preparing for supper. I thought it was odd that none of these isolated people took notice to us. They were very personable. I guess they saw us talking to the others and knew we were friends. My friends and I knew we could stay here, and it was safe.
Call them if they will listen, if they will try, it would be even better. The song haunts in the background of this day. So sure the melody swims, dives in and out of my mind. He can almost hear it in his dreams, in his sleep. This one's for you. And he continues, only 2 more hours. Hourly, monthly, I dream. I have waited a long time, and this day impatience fills me. Tension impedes me. I don't know why, do not question. People, they're everywhere, you cannot avoid them, you cannot ignore them, just shut it out. He laughs in the background to the music. She glances once.
Similar to one, but they're the same dream.
my head, and this, I'm telling you, this one's weird, and I remember it actually vividly, the whole thing. And it was, I don't know, it was about in fourth grade, 10 or 11 years old, and this plane was going across the sky, and, well, it was going low, it was really low, that's what I was tripping on. But I went to bed, and I went to sleep, and I dreamed about this plane. That I was out in the front yard. I was in the backyard when I first saw a plane, and in my dream I was in the front yard. And I looked up and it was a small plane, and there was a guy hanging from it, and he falls all the way to our front yard. The guy stands up, his head split open from his forehead, and I can see like his skull or something. It's the strangest. I'm telling you, this is weird. He gets up. There happens to be a bike right next to him. He gets on the bike and he starts riding off. Now, this is when I was like 10 years old. No acid trips, no nothing, man. It's just way off the wall. Anyway, I think nothing of it, and I get in my, I'm dreaming, I'm getting in my grandfather's Cadillac. This is when I live with my grandparents. And we're driving off and going to a friend's house. On the way to our friend's house, here's this guy riding his bike with his head still split open. I'll have to say I don't remember it all, but he did say something to me, and I can't remember what he said. He's like waving to me, smiling, and he said something to me. And it was like a blonde, kind of like shoulder length, short or straight blonde hair. I don't know if he looked like this one guy. He played the Phoenix or something, some series. He kind of looked like that. That's who I'm picturing. But we go to a friend's house, and for some reason our friends, you know, it was just, you know, like a few miles away, and we're in the city, and they bought a seal. This is in my dream. It's just off the wall stuff, man.
Stops as the Burgermeister as he sits atop the dark bell tower eating chili fries and laughing hysterically at passing clowns, heads bowed against the downpour as they pass another day. Great swaths of crimson red spread across the canvas of life. Entire worlds are here to go, and it is nothing more than collective atoms rubbing against each other, waiting for the meteor to strike. Not me, one of them says, and ventures out on his own. Last night's dream. Me is Winston Smith in Brazil. I'm putting coins into a fortune-telling machine. I win $100 and I dance a jig there in front of the spinning diodes, laughing and clapping my hands before the night lady comes by to see what's wrong. Subdued, I wander into a large white-tiled bathroom and I feel safe there, but soon I find myself in a reclined bicycle race toiling down dirt roads in South America. One of the racers pulls ahead to the finish line at the last moment and I collapse at the side, wheezing and twitching, eyes flush and tearing, dreaming of this other world in which I drag a huge bag of meat off the third story balcony of an old courthouse. This contains an entire cow, I say, and I throw it onto the pool table that hungry men lean across, waiting to drag the load up into a white van. I jump down and pull out an entire calf carcass, black burned and blue. I pull off a crunchy strip of flesh and find myself back in the Fahrenheit 451 bathroom dungeon. I hide in there with all my friends. I tend to my aquarium, suffused in an ultraviolet light, the fishes' voices playing themselves out on the tiny scratchy speaker there on the side of my desk, barely audible against the bubbles which trail frantically to the surface. This is the place of lying about, I think. This is the place away from the rules. This is the place of the tiny television screens and dripping faucets and quiet, still air, away from dust motes and stomping feet and always keeping on, moving forward and onward to this place, I think. And then there's a knock on the door as the monocled uniformed thugs start opening it to see what's inside. I hide underneath the console sink and they come in and take my friends away. Eventually, of course, they do find me under there with the help of Lieutenant Uhura, smiling maniacally as her sharp breasts point at me from her blood-red miniskirt, and they drag me out. Men in khaki uniforms and white helmets, feet first, I am dragged, subdued again. They beat me on the bottom of my feet until I pass out from the pain, and later I am made to drag large boxes down railroad tracks. I find myself alone again, outside the city in the Badlands, outside, running through mud puddles of no food or shelter. I come across the stuffed-up hole that leads back to my lazy bathroom. I try to sleep, imagine myself in there, but I am only waiting to be discovered again. I move on amidst the trees and rocks, and soon I am chased by hungry dogs who do not bark very much when they find me, but go back to tell their grim masters who come to take me away again. Surely I will be killed this time, but in the meantime, the mud puddle is so warm, and all I want to do is sleep. And when I wake up, I imagine that I am in a studio apartment, listening to a dripping faucet. My watch says 3:41 a.m., and I blink and stare off into the darkness, waiting for sleep to claim me again.
In this one dream, it was nighttime. I'm standing, it's nighttime. I'm standing at this river, and it's a great, strongly flowing river, you know, and it's kind of beautiful in the nighttime, and you know, in the nighttime, and the moonlight, and so forth. And I'm naked, or if I'm not naked, I take off my clothes, you know, by the side of the river there, and then I jump into the river, and like I submerge into it, and then I rise up. And I remember the feeling of that dream. It was incredible. Just the river flowing all around me, the water just cleansing. And it was really an incredibly beautiful, sensual kind of feeling. Very, you know, just the way it was cleansing me and so forth. And that was that was kind of a neat dream. And I don't know, you could, once again, you know, you could read any amount of symbolism into that, I suppose. I thought it was kind of interesting how that was a river, and the other ones were always like oceans, you know, and great huge bodies of water.
Send today at 12:29 a.m.
You have just heard episode 5 of Midnight Voice Jail. Midnight Voice Jail is produced by Phineas Narco and Angel DeMonique, compiled and edited by Phineas Narco, with material provided by Ronald Redball, Alexander T. Newport, and Angel DeMonique. Visit us on the web at www.geocities.com/voicejail. Thanks to the National Cynical Network and all voice jailers everywhere. See you next time.
You have no messages remaining. Bye.